up the Senate Committee on Business and Transportation for Wednesday, the beautiful day known as April 15th. I turned mine in yesterday, but the federal government won't be very happy. They're not getting any more out of me. So, but we'll see what we can do here. We're going to open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 580. And Aaron, if you could give us a summary of the bill, which is as drafted, and then the amendment, which will change the bill, which is what we're going to consider today.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, Senate Bill 580 directs Oregon Department of Transportation to begin collecting tolls on Interstate 5 bridges crossing the Columbia River no later than January 1st, 2011, and establishes the Columbia River Crossing Fund for deposits of collected tolls. There is the Dash 6 Amendment, which replaces the measure and requires the Oregon Department of Transportation to make every effort to enter into intergovernmental agreements necessary to implement tolling on Interstate 5 and 205 highway bridges crossing the Columbia River.
Okay. Mr. Phillips, you and anyone else that you would like to bring up to the dais as the chief proponents of the bill, we'll start with you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Kevin, why don't you go ahead and start?
Chair Metzger, member of the committees, for the record, my name is Kevin Jensen. I'm the business manager for the iron workers in Portland, Oregon. On behalf of my members, I'd like to thank you for hearing Senate Bill 580 and would encourage you to help us by making this a law. The amount of work that would be created by this project is staggering. It would not only help employ many of the people in our industry, but in turn would help employ people who support that industry through various efforts. The unemployment we face today is at 15% for our journeymen and 20% for our apprentices. The impact, again, like I said, would be great for our economy. Personally, also would affect the city in a very good manner and the region. So I would encourage you to pass this bill to the floor for passage. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Phillips.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Paul Phillips with PacWest Communications. I represent the District Council of Iron Workers as well as the Oregon State Building and Construction Trades Council. I'm here in support of Senate Bill 580, the Dash 6 amendments. Tolling is going to be a part of the mix. We all believe that. This starts the discussion. On March 18, 2009, Dave Thompson of ODOT said that this would be a necessary first step. We certainly agree with that, and we agree with your amendments, Mr. Chair. We'd like to start tolling and set that aside in a fund right now, but we'll take what we can get to get this process started. When we met, the two of us and other members of the trades met with our congressional delegation, specifically Congressman Blumenauer and Congressman DeFazio. Both of them encouraged us to do what we could to have a state match. Both of them encouraged us to do what we could to start the process forward. Don't wait. We believe Senate Bill 580 lives up to that with this Dash 6 amendments. It's a reasonable deadline, Mr. Chair, that you've proposed, and I appreciate the support of the committee. Both your vice chair have been helpful, and Senator Verger in helping get amendments in the bill drafted originally. So I appreciate the work that you've done. The Draft 6 amendments, Mr. Chair, really call for a collaborative agreement, a collaborative process. And I think that's what it's going to take to make a project of this size a reality. It doesn't force the project sponsors to do anything unreasonable. It just really moves the ball forward. Delay in this process, if this bill doesn't go forward, doesn't remove any controversy. All it does is delay the controversy that will come up. This doesn't set up a fund, doesn't force the tolling, but gets the process moving forward. We'd be comfortable with pre-completion tolling, too. But if that's not a reality in today's world, let's go forward with the Dash 6 amendments and get the process going. And thank you for your time, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Phillips. And just so I understand, and correct me if I'm wrong, and what we're also trying to do with the Dash 6 is, as you pointed out, number one, this is to get the ducks lined up to be able to say yes if the agreement between Washington, the feds, the other communities, which is articulated in ORS 383.03, that would cover all units of government. And the concept is that the any discussion of pre-tolling, which was written in the original bill, is our understanding that our current statute would allow Oregon to do that. We could not participate in an agreement of that without this.
Right.
Doesn't mean it would happen. It would just mean that we would be able to be at the table with all of the other partners associated with this project and be able to have that discussion and negotiation should that proved to be a concept that was decided upon. Is that a correct understanding?
Well stated, Mr. Chair. That is exactly correct.
Okay. Questions for either of our first two panels?
No, Mr. Chair, I don't have a question, but I will make a comment that I think that tolling is in the future for Oregon. I think it is the answer to a lot of situations, and I'm sure that the department will be able to take a look and in the management of their department and see tolling in a very good way.
Thank you, Senator. Okay,
thank you. Chair.
Representative Kotek has arrived, and we'd like to have her come forward.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, colleagues. For the record, Tina Kotek, State Representative in House District 44. I represent North and parts of Northeast Portland. And the I-5 Bridge, smack dab in my district. I represent also Hayden Island, also known as Jansen Beach, where the bridge goes over. And clearly, the Columbia River Crossing Project is extremely important for my district, whether it's commuter needs or freight mobility or safety or bike pedestrian across the across Columbia River, extremely important. So I'm very pleased to see Senate Bill 580 back on the schedule, and I'm in full support of the Dash 6 amendments, and I want to thank the Senator for highlighting them for me this morning, knowing that this bill was back up, because I do think it's very important for the state of Oregon to set some parameters about having the maximum flexibility to manage funding for this project. And I do believe that includes tolling. I personally believe that's pre-construction tolling. Whether or not we get there or not, I think we have to have all the options on the table, not only for the I-5 bridge, but the 205. We need to fund this project. We need to also manage movement back and forth across the river. Particularly in my district, we have folks who really can't get home at the end of the day because of the traffic on the 5 leading up to the bridge. So if we're going to move the state forward, and this is important for not only Oregon but Washington, and I think it's very important to have the set of parameters with directions of the Department of Transportation that we have to look at all the options, and I'm really pleased to see this before us today. So thank you, and I urge your full support of the Dash 6s.
Thank you, Representative. Any questions for Representative Kotek? Well, thank you for your encouragement on this as well.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, colleagues.
Thank you. Let's get Matt Garrett up from the Department of Transportation, and then we'll get some other testimony.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Matthew Garrett. I'm the director of the Oregon Department of Transportation. And first, let me see that we strongly support breathing life into this project. We are working very hard. We have been engaged in this discussion well over a decade. We stand on the shoulders of many who have helped inform this and move this project through the environmental process. We are running very hard to secure a final environmental document sometime in the 2010. We would hope, if all things fall into place, we're acquiring right away and doing final design in the 2011 time frame, positioning us for construction in 2012, and we think we have a 5 or 6 year construction life for this big, complex project. This is a good project for many reasons, not only for the economic health of the West Coast, if not the nation, but the environmental benefits, the safety benefits, the commute option benefits are numerous. And as Kevin, my friend, spoke a little bit earlier, this is about jobs. When you play this out, 27,000 jobs are put on the ground with this effort. But I would be remiss if I didn't share some thoughts with you specific to the Dash 6. I guess it's just trying to seek some clarification. And, Mr. Chairman, you've already brought some clarity to some of the questions I had. But as I looked at the Dash 6, knowing the efforts we have engaged in right now with the Project Sponsors Council, this was a group of folks that were brought into being by both Governor Kulongoski and Governor Gregoire, June of 2008, the two dots, the two major cities, Portland and Vancouver, the transit districts, the MPOs. We stand there as a working group to inform this discussion, to animate this bridge. The importance of it is not lost on anyone, and all these players have embraced this opportunity. This is a big, noisy project. There is no question about it, but decisions have been made, a preferred alternative identified and embraced by all these folks, and this project sponsors council moving forward. As I see the language in the Section 1, looking at the various elements of government, I see that as the Project Sponsors Council. I see that syncing itself up. I want to make sure it's not portrayed in any other manner, because we have a consensus with these folks to move forward, to take on these tough issues, not only tolling structures, transportation demand, the various options, but the issues of safety, incident response, freight mobility, predictable travel times, travel speeds. We want to make sure when all is said and done that we have a facility that we are maximizing the operations across the board. And those are the types of efforts we're moving forward. I find some comfort in your clarification that we do have that structure in place, and it seems to fit the definition of these units of governments. The second issue that, if I could just seek some clarification, is the specific timeline, the 2011 timeline. Anytime there's a timeline, there's a rigidity, especially when you have a group of folks that are trying to move not only this issue, but several issues forward. As we look to optimize the performance of this bridge, again, that will open hopefully in 2017, but we're prepping for that. We're not only identifying the vehicle in a mobility council who will help inform the decisions that the transportation commissions make, but also trying to set out and identify specific measures on the functionality of the bridge. We're working through that. 2011, I always get a little concerned with lines in the sands. We might not make it. That concerns me. You brought some clarity with regard to the way I define a tolling structure, the demand management approval process that seeks. I think we're migrating away from pre-construction tolling. Maybe not, but that's the way I interpret it. But I will tell you that is a conversation we have yet to have. Legitimate to put on the table, there's no question, starting to generate numbers. The financial conversation is significant to this project, but we have yet to engage that level. I don't know the political ramifications of those conversations, to be very honest with you. I would just raise a concern about the timing, the 2011 timing. It may be plenty of time. It might not be enough time. But I want to make sure that the relationships that we have built, that we have secured with that project's sponsors council, are in no way compromised by this piece of legislation. You have helped me understand better the intent here. I just want to make sure that I understand as I reengage with my partners up in the region to move this thing forward.
Well, thank you, Mr. Garrett, and I think you've captured what the intent is, and what the conversation is to make sure you have all the available tools from the state's perspective in the large group of stakeholders, government stakeholders, and to be able to enter into any agreements with the blessing of the legislature to have that flexibility, which is why we wrote them that, you know, bills often come out different than what you've asked. That's just the way it is, and sometimes people get stuck on that. But we want to make sure you have those tools available. It does not, as we've mentioned, require pre-construction tolling, but at least if that elevated up, you would have the ability to talk about that and talk about it in a context where you could represent the state's interests at that table. And that's what our intent is to do, is make sure that can go forward. Questions for Director Garrett? Senator Berger.
Hello.
Hello.
Nice to see you.
It's good to see you.
I don't know that I have a question, but maybe I do. This is very clear to me, and so I just want to be sure that I'm expressing my clarity in it, and that is that you're developing the rate structure for the tolling, which I think 2011 looks reasonable for that. And then the other is the demand management term, which I think is very good, and it just follows right in on what the chairman just said. So there's where you have all that flexibility of being able to do what you need to do, because I liked it. I thought it was not at all micromanaging. It was just giving you something to go forward with. But I do think that the tolling structure and the time frame that they've given you, it seems to balance quite well for me.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Verger, I truly appreciate the flexibility. Please know that the suite of options I need in front of me to move this thing forward. Tolling will be a significant conversation. Again, we are reintroducing tolling to Oregonians here. It's been a while since we've had a state facility that was tolled. That's fine. That's a slow process. We'll engage. It is a very useful tool. And having this flexibility and engaging the appropriate folks to help inform this conversation, we will continue to mature, and one day we will be cutting a ribbon on the new Columbia River Crossing Bridge. Senator Schrader.
Yes, I hope this is an appropriate question for you this afternoon. I'm just going to ask for some clarification, because as I read this, it's tolling on bridges, the I-5, the Columbia Crossing itself, also the I-205 bridge that it goes across the Columbia as well. So, and I know I've been a big supporter of the Columbia River Crossing project. I've certainly, I know that speaking with the business community, realized this is going to be a huge project for the movement of goods and services and all those other kinds of good things. But it looks as if the revenue stream, I just want some clarification for the tolling on the I-205 bridge and as well as the Columbia River, is there going to be any dollars allocated to the I-205 corridor at all out of this? I'm reading this and I'm not quite teasing that out. And being aware of that corridor and the issues that we're dealing with there in terms of freight mobility, movement, intersection issues. So if you're telling one area, is there going to be any largesse, I guess, for that other piece of the corridor that's so essential for freight movement?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Schrader, part of this greater conversation, a lot of moving parts. When you toll I-5, there is an implication to 205 in terms of diversion. Those are the types of issues we are engaging right now. We are engaged in the tolling reconnaissance, trying to inform the discussion. What is the implication of not only tolling the bridge, but at what rates? When do people come back? I will tell you the I-5 corridor is the corridor of choice. That's where people want to drive. Financially, trying to hit the sweet spot in terms of making sure you have the most efficient facility there, you start to play with some numbers. That's the demand management conversation. You can inform that decision as well as the various commute options that come with this bridge. Again, this is more than just a bridge. I will tell you that the discussion specific to 205 lead us down a pathway that haven't gone very far. I will tell you there are federal regulations we must look at as we turn our attention to 205. But right now, the discussions that I am most comfortable with and familiar with have been specific to I-205. There may be some collateral issues that roll I'm most comfortable with I-5. The collateral issues may roll to 205, and we can inform, I think, some of the questions that you're asking right now. I do know we do have some barriers that we need to move forward. Monies normally have to stay within the corridors. Those are just the rules of the game. But we haven't explored that horizon in any depth right now.
Further questions for the director?
Thank you, Director.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Ronald Zverin, John Charles, and Brooke Howell can all come forward.
Thank you, Chair Metzger and committee members. I'd like to speak in opposition to Senate Bill...
Your name first.
My name is Ron Swarren, for
thank
the record.
You.
I live in Portland. I'd like to speak in opposition to Senate Bill 580 and the -6 amendment. One thing that I heard one of the earlier speakers say was that there would be a lot of jobs created. I did also hear a figure of 25,000. I don't believe it's the purpose of the government to make jobs. We're not a centrally planned economy, and that's what happens in a centrally planned economy. However, if there's a project that does benefit the people and commercial interests, then that's something that we could engage in. This project was not really examined properly to see how the different areas of industrial expansion and residential expansion in the Portland area would be benefited by the project. What this project, the Columbia River Crossing Project, is trying to do is to modify a route that's become overtaxed. And that's the I-5 route. And the reason that the I-5 route became overtaxed and overburdened with traffic is because there was too much business expansion in the northwest corridor of the Portland metropolitan area. That's the area that typically is called the Silicon Forest. In the last 20 years, there's been a lot of jobs created out there, and at the same time, there's been a lot of population influx into Clark County. So there, I believe it's in the last 20 years that that congestion has developed on I-5. And what is somewhat different about Portland, it's great to be on a cutting-edge experiment in trying to restrict highway construction. And I appreciate that Portlanders are very sensitive about highway construction, but we've started going against the conventional logic of interstate highway construction in metropolitan regions. Typically, besides the main interstate highways, there is what's called the ring road. And those ring roads provide improved transportation access to suburban areas. In Portland, on the east side, we have the 205 freeway that provides access to the southeast and northeast quadrants of the area. And in the southwest quadrant, we have the 217 highway. But in the northwest, we have nothing at this point. And people have been somewhat alarmed about putting a highway out in the farm area. I'm not in favor of that, but there is a possibility of having a route closer in that will solve many of those transportation difficulties. So, unfortunately, the CRC hasn't examined those processes or those other options, but has tended to concentrate on remedying the congestion on the present Interstate 5 route. So until the CRC can show that it's more responsive to public interest in having an improved access to all areas of the metropolitan region, I don't think that we should have a tolling approved. Perhaps in the future, when there's been a more responsive plan put forth by the Columbia River Crossing Task Force, that would be a possibility. I've been observing this process and participating in meetings for about 3 years, and I know that there were some other options on the table, but unfortunately they were eliminated. And I think those other options were very worth considering, and elected officials in the Washington area, Washington State, also believe that they are. So we need to have a broader consensus of what needs to be done, and I would oppose tolling at this point, but maybe not in the future.
Thank you, Mr. Swearing. Mr. Charles.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is John Charles, President of Cascade Policy Institute. I'm not usually appearing before you in favor of taxes and fees. In fact, some of my friends have been outside for the last hour making noise on this very subject in front of the building. They probably wouldn't actually appreciate me being here in support of this bill, but I do support the policy thrust of this bill because I believe that highways, tunnels, and bridges should be paid for through direct user fees, and what's being proposed in this bill is a direct user fee, and if it's collected electronically, then it's fairly easy to administer, and it's good for the user. My one concern, however, in the latest iteration has to do with line 11 of the Dash 6 amendments, where the specific phrase transportation demand management appears. Now, that's a term of art that refers to a whole class of bureaucratic and ineffective and expensive strategies such as drive less, save more, the wasteful campaign Metro has been using for the last couple of years, or mandatory commute trip reduction programs, or traffic calming, or a whole bunch of things that motorists properly perceive as punitive and expensive and designed to basically punish them for being motorists. And we've been doing this for about 20 years, at least, in Portland. We don't need any enabling legislation to do TDM. They're experts at it up there. But that's not how you're going to sell this. The only reason motorists would support this idea is if you give them speed, 24/7. So my suggestion is that you keep this as a peak hour pricing scheme. You replace line 11 with the words I have here at the bottom of the page, quote, tolling that ensures maintenance of traffic speeds of at least 50 miles per hour at all times. Because that's what people want. I've given hundreds of speeches on this subject over 20 years to civic organizations, and when you mention transportation demand management, that's a code phrase, they instantly get that. That's when the conversation's over. They don't want to be managed. They just want to pay a fee and get to go where they go fast. And the experience worldwide is if you have variable pricing that varies by time of day, direction of travel, day of the week, you can ensure free flow conditions, and you hit a sweet spot of around 50 miles per hour where you get the best fuel economy, the lowest air emissions, the lowest greenhouse gas emissions. The theoretical throughput can be achieved of the highway, which would actually be higher than it is now, which is counterintuitive. You end up tolling people on the road, not off the road, and you make it something that's desirable, so that once you start tolling and give people that, people don't run from it, they want more of it, because it makes their life better, because it begins to mimic the actual market that we have everywhere else, which we don't have in our sort of command and control road system. So I think this is just the beginning towards what I view as a much higher set of benefits. If you to eventually toll the ubiquitous highway system, you would get synergy where the benefits are far in excess of just the cash cost. That's not what this bill is about, but I think it's a good start towards a conversation to educate people about why market-based road pricing is good for the system, is good for motorists, is not punishment. And if we start down that path, we recognize that we're offering people something they want, then they'll appreciate it. And with regard to Senator Schrader's excellent question, I believe that revenue from the east side should be spent on the east side. It could be spent probably within 10 miles north or south of that bridge, and if it makes the motorist driving experience better, motorists will be happy to do it. As long as they're not taken advantage of and they get benefits, I think people will support this. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Charles. Welcome.
Thank you, Chair Metzger and members of the committee. My name is Brock Holland. I'm a transportation advocate for Environment Oregon. We have about 30,000 members statewide, and we work to protect clean air, clean water, and open space. And I had expressed some concerns about the Dash 5 amendments earlier to Chair Metzger's office, and the principal thrust of that concern was that the specific limitation towards congestion to not leave the bill sufficiently open for the broader discussion of how we would want to put in specific sideboards to how we manage traffic. And so that was our principal concern, and I think that the Dash 6 provides enough opportunity for that discussion to move forward. I would like to make the point that Environment Oregon has made the position in the past and continues to do so that we are not in favor of a large new bridge at this point without those sideboards put in place that are sufficiently strong enough to help make sure we limit the impact on global warming and sprawl as well as other environmental and social concerns. So with that, I appreciate the efforts to move the Dash 6 to allow the broader discussion to continue on this bill.
Thank you, Mr. Hall. Questions for either of our three panelists? Senator Virgil.
My question, Mr. Chairman, is for Mr. Charles. I think words count. Connotation of those words really count. And when I read transportation demand management, I don't read at all what you just said. So I would like for you to enlighten me a little bit on why you believe that connotates to something that motorists wouldn't like. When I read it, I see it as a flexibility and also the charge that ODOT has that moves traffic. In other words, in my city of Coos Bay, which 101 is the highway, we have many complaints about people wanting to cross the highway. That's not what ODOT is about. They're just to move traffic, which is exactly your point about give motorists what they want. So tell me, what does transportation demand management say to you?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Virgil, what it says to me as someone who has been in the business for 20 years and attended hundreds of meetings, at least in the Portland area, TDM, if you were to Google it and look at what comes up, it embraces a suite of things that are not market-oriented, and they're not really designed to give the motorist a pleasant driving experience. They're mostly designed to, quote, get people out of their cars. That's how it's been implemented for decades in Portland. And so I view it as sort of a code phrase that is there precisely because most people wouldn't understand that it's a term of art, and it sounds kind of benign. But as practice, if you were to attend one of the JPAC meetings in Portland, the monthly places where all the money is divvied up, you would learn really quickly what it means is a whole list of things that involve taking flexible federal gas tax money and spending it to make life worse for motorists by spending it on a whole bunch of things that don't give them anything. And so I just think, A, we've been doing it for 20 years, so we don't need it in this bill. They clearly already can do it and are doing it. And B, if you, those of you who are brave enough to vote for this and have to talk to voters, and they say, what do we get out of it? I think what the statute should say is very clearly what they get out of it. They just want to be able to go at the maximum posted road speed, and that's what they're willing to pay for, I believe. So,
any other questions? Thank all three of you. Thank you. You very much.
Thank you.
I have two more signed up, Sharon Nassett and Andrea Meyer.
For the record, my name is Sharon Nassett. Hello, Chairman Baker, Senators. Nice to see you. I have given the gentleman a piece of paper today. The transportation and financing part of the Columbia River project is huge. First off, you probably know, since I have testified and been in your office several times, that I am totally opposed to taking the current Columbia River Crossing Bridge, which is a historic structure, which is considered to be structurally sufficient, has had $40 million of repairs put on it since 2000, has 50 years of serviceable life left, and its only problem that makes it antiquated, it isn't carrying more than 25,000 to 30,000 cars a day over what it was supposed to carry. That's its only problem. I would say it's a good workhorse. You never take out a good workhorse. A couple of papers. The one piece of paper on one side is talking about the costs of a few of the structures that are on Jansen Beach. The map shows bare, vacant, and publicly owned land on Jansen Beach, which happens to be owned by the port. On the other side is the Columbia River Crossing Project impact area. The hotel is $53 million. These prices that are here with the Taco Bell, over $1 million and $11 million for the Safeway, and all of these are the projects on the east side, or the, excuse me, properties on the east side, do not include all the properties, do not include the 27 residents, most of them a quarter of a million or more, and do not include the 280 pieces of property that are taken or imposed on in Washington, which I think almost 30 have historic titling, and you're going to either have to move them or secure them differently. I have not seen anything for funding that says the acquisition of each of these properties, finding them new properties of good retail, most of them are business, you have employment, you have moving their inventories, and you have expense of finding them another place. These buildings were built in the 80s and are full of all kinds of environmental things, and when they spend 7 years of scraping it off on our interstate highway where we're trying to have business going through, we're going to have major problems. On the second side is the side of the accountability. The Columbia River Crossing has been here since 2004, and I have not seen an annual budget, an expansion, that is required by the state of Oregon and Washington. They sit in a hoity-toity building downtown Vancouver when they have properties at ODOT and WADOT they could have used and brought all brand new furniture, have close to 80 employees, and spend almost $2 million a month on what? There's no oversight committee, as you know, and they have not been able to provide these. Tolling. That bridge belonged to us from 1970 until they took it for the interstate highway. I don't play cards, but to tell them up front we're willing to have our people pay for something that they took and they didn't give us local access, huh? If you tell them straight up front you're willing to come across with every dime, they're never going to come across with anything. 70% of that should come from us, should come from the U.S. government. And then the other 30% we should look at other ways, such as scratch-offs. People can put their money where their mouth is. They can start doing it now. The other thing is, The NEPA process has not been followed. There is no reason to continue with this process when more than 500 people met at a rally with seven elected officials that wanted to be present and four spoke. The person that helped organize 1,000 Friends of Oregon, Robert Liberty, our commissioner, our counselor, was one of the main speakers. So was Senator Benton, a good standing Republican, land use different type of guy, sharing the same stage. We had coalitions that were anti-rail, for rail, for bridge, anti-bridge, Autobahn Society, Sustainable Future, Livable Future, Lars Larson. You're going to tell me that the Bicycle Alliance gave a standing ovation for Senator Benton and it didn't make the paper? That's the problem with having an embedded newspaper like we do. They didn't point out any of the obvious. I've been in a lot of groups that have succeeded that started out with 25 people and no elected officials that would talk to us. 500. The first annual, we can do better and for a lot less by state. So I'm asking that you step back and you think the best way to do this project, 40% comes off the top if we don't toll. 40% of what the tolls bring in goes to administer, pay for it. Bare vacant publicly owned land, millions of dollars of property. You can get the people that are in the Rivergate, Northgate area to buy in. Public-private partnership for those businesses that would actually have direct access to the freeway and to their businesses, trade-oriented development in that area, that is the direction we need to go. And if you tell them that you'll take money from us now and they don't have, the federal government hasn't have to come up with a dime, you'll be pillaging and plundering the same people that already gave the bridge the first time. If it's worth $2 billion to build a new one, it's worth $2 billion now.
Ms. Meyer.
Chair Metzger, members of the committee, Andrea Meyer, legislative director for the ACLU of Oregon. To be clear, we have no position on the underlying issue.
Really? You must be the only one in the entire Northwest that does not have a position.
It gets a little beyond the Bill of Rights. probably not for some. But I do have a privacy concern that I want to bring forward, because as we begin in Oregon to discuss this, one of the concerns that we have across the country is to make sure that when we do, if we do toll roads or toll bridges, that there is a way to ensure that there's always a means to pay by cash, so that there is not simply the only means is by a swipe card or other ways which require someone to be a little bit more monitored by the government. So the freedom to pay by cash and to travel through with some ease, we'd love to see language in part of the instructions that you give that should be included, and we should never lose sight, because I am worried that without that instruction, one option could be to make that very difficult, if not impossible, for people to do that. So I'd be happy to work with language or work with you, or and hopefully we can capture that if that's the will of the committee in terms of this issue.
Yeah, thank you, Ms. Meyer. I'll go to a question in a sec, but one of the things is if an agreement is made on some type of tolling, in all likelihood, they probably would be coming back to us for some implementing language about dealing with some of those particular issues. So, Senator Starr.
Thank you. As you know, Andrea, electronic tolling makes tolling work where you don't have a travel plaza and slows down commuters and makes a big traffic mess. Cash is a problem. Cash doesn't work in that scenario. I mean, it just doesn't work. You completely negate the reason to have electronic tolling if you have a plaza where you let people put coins into a bucket. You make people stop and give them $3 or whatever the toll will be. In exchange for that, what would you say that you allow folks to use cash to buy a card that then is on the dash to, there's no record, you just buy, via cash, you buy your card, put it on your dash, and then the electronic tolling works, and it allows you to have the pricing mechanisms that allow free-flowing traffic that really gets the public supporting, the system, really.
Sure. Chair Metzger, Senator Starr, being no expert and having not driven in the East on a long time, I'm not that familiar with the current processes, but it is certainly one way. But what I do worry about is, as you know, often people forget. they may have cash on them, but they didn't get the card updated. They didn't expect to be going there, and the flexibility. And, you know, there is a balance in issues. Obviously, the electronic means is going to be the most attractive. It's just preserving that there at least is an opportunity for people to pay by cash. Certainly having a card that would ensure, again, some privacy, but allowing ease for consumers to go through would be one way to deal with it. But I think we would... I think we'd have a problem if we never left any opportunity. Well, we would have certainly concerns in terms of privacy if we didn't leave any avenue or road available for those who unexpectedly go through or don't realize they've used up all on their card. And Chair Metzger, just to comment, I appreciate that. I looked at this and looked at the language sort of as instruction to start thinking about it, looking what's necessary in the arrangements, developing a rate structure. And so why I come forward is because I would hope that would be part of the thought process at the front end and dealing with some of the dynamics that Senator Starr raised at the front end rather than a proposal. And no, we didn't even consider that issue, and it's really too difficult to go back to the drawing board. So that's why giving some guidance or some instruction or hope that is available at the front end would be our recommendation.
Thank you. Any other questions for either of our guests? Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you. It is a privacy day. Thank you.
Yeah. We'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 580. And we'll open a work session on Senate Bill 779. Aaron, this was the day that you folks heard this bill when I was gone. I did listen to it. And drafted a dash two amendment. Maybe you could review the bill, Aaron, and then the dash two amendment, and then we'll have a discussion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Committee members, Senate Bill 779 increases the number of video lottery terminals that may be placed on premises of race meet licensees. It increases the number from 10 to 40. We do have a dash two amendment that would increase it to 20. In your packet, you have the dash two amendment with a fiscal and revenue statement attached. This bill was originally heard on the 6th of April.
Okay. So I think I'll ask the proponents of the bill to come forward, whoever wants to represent the proponents, and comment on the amendment.
Chair Metzger, members of the committee, my name is Athena Douglas. I'm here on behalf of the Oregon Horsemen's Benevolent and Protective Association. I was at the hearing and spoke on April 6th, and we are the ones that requested the bill in the first place. And although it's not the original 40, nor the 30 that we spoke about on the 6th, we are supportive of the chair's requested amendment to have the number be 20. It's helpful. It's not quite where we're trying to get, but anything is better than nothing. And if this is what people feel comfortable with moving forward, we're very happy to stick with that.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Rob Douglas, representing the Oregon Thoroughbred Owners and Breeders Association. We testified in support of Senate Bill 779 at the April 6th hearing, and we would support the bill moving forward with the amendment.
Okay. So, discussion on the underlying bill or the amendment with the proponents. Any questions? Senator George.
Athena, Rob, I guess here's my issue. As you know, I have a lot of horse breeders in my district. I mean, it's a huge industry in my district. I want to see the track succeed. I'm trying to get at the issue of whether this does anything to save the track. In essence, I mean, if we've got some folks who have some big concerns about the slippery slope of where this leads to. And so I'm stuck between this. If we start down this slippery slope towards some type of like casino-looking thing at the track, which we may need to go to, I mean, at some point have a broader discussion, I'm trying to figure out, does this save the track? I mean, it just seems such a small number. Talk to me a little bit about what this does as far as the impact on the track and keeping the industry intact.
Mr. Chair, Senator George, Rob Douglas, I think it does a couple of things. It provides more funds, increases purses, increases activity, draws more patrons, goes towards saving the track. The chair's amendment, adding 10 machines, I think it pretty much takes away the argument that you've run afoul of the Attorney General's opinion and actually established a new casino. And that's why we're comfortable with the 10.
Senator Schrader.
I'd just like to echo Senator George's comments. I come from a county that has the largest number of horses and horse breeders in the state of Oregon. And I think it's number 11 in the country, actually. So, and obviously, the previous Senator Schrader started his career as an equine practitioner, so obviously very supportive of the horse industry. And again, a little bit of the concern here, again, I liked your term, the slippery slope a little bit. We want to maintain the track, certainly want to maintain the breeding of the industry for our horse folk. But I'm a little concerned over the years if maybe a continual loop back, you know, okay, so this isn't working, so maybe we have to go back and see if we can get a few more, you know, these terminals. So I would just like to get on the record that at some point, assuming we move forward with this bill, we really, this whole notion of it becoming a casino will be rearing its head again. So, again, let's just keep some institutional memory with this, and if we move forward, you know, kind of with this bill, again, on the record that the intent is not to do a casino, but at some point you might be looking at other ways to maintain the integrity of the industry and the track rather than just adding these particular gaming machines. So,
Mr. Chair, Senator Schrader, I appreciate your comments. Representing the breeders, without a commercial race meet, we have no place for our product. There's no reason to preserve that open space, to have that agricultural activity. So we do want to maintain the commercial race meet.
Yeah. Okay. Any other questions for our folks here?
You want to have the other folks testify?
Yeah. Okay. Thank you. Mr. Martin, do you want to come forward? See Mr. Mason here, so I think you're speaking for him as well. I have a funny feeling. Okay. Your comments on the Dash 2 amendments.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Justin Martin. I'm here representing the Confederated Tribes of Grand Ronde, where I'm also a tribal member, as well as the Oregon Tribal Gaming Alliance, in which I am the association manager for that organization. We haven't seen any Dash 2 amendments or really been consulted on that as another option, but I can tell you right offhand, again, it's not the number of machines. We've seen this bill start at 40. We've seen it go to 30. Now we've seen it go to 20 in an effort to make this legislation more palatable. Again, what I think you have in front of you, and let me back up a little bit by saying we don't want to see the racing industry go away. We hope we've made that clear. We've talked to the other side as well. We would certainly love to look and look at other options and ways in which we could help that industry. We do not want to see that go away. I want to make sure that that's clear. That being said, I think there are two choices in front of the committee today. In Mr. Cartney's testimony the other day, the question was asked directly, would 30 machines save the racing industry and get you to where you need to be? The response was probably not. We would need about 1,000 machines to do so. That was on the record. The other comment there was this would be a good place to start. And as Senator Schrader noted earlier in her question, would that really be a good place to start? What's the intention here? Is this going to save it until we can find the answer for the racing industry, or is this just opening the door? It was 6, now it's 10 for the racetrack, now it's 20. In 2011, is it 50? In 2013, is it 100? In 2015, is it 1,000? And again, I think we'll have to answer some of those difficult questions. So I would ask the members of this committee today to look at really both sides of the issue. If we feel 10 more video lottery terminals at the racetrack will save that industry, by all means, vote yes. But if in your heart of hearts you realize that this is just opening a door and putting off what may be inevitable without having a good discussion about what could save the racing industry, we would ask you today to vote in opposition. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Martin. We'll check the heart of hearts here. Questions for Mr. Martin? Senator George.
Thank you. Justin, you and I talked about this in my office, and I kind of wanted to have a discussion a little bit more broadly. I mean, obviously, from my perspective, the race industry was the first gaming industry in the state. They've been good players in that market. They have been, they've not tried to block anybody else from having it. So I have a great deal of sympathy for them. Where would you see we could go to save this industry. I mean, a lot of us who have these things in our districts are under an immense amount of pressure to say this is an important industry, lots of money, lots of jobs. How would you say that there could be, maybe between the tribes or something else, some way of protecting specifically Portland Meadows?
Mr. Chair, Senator George, unfortunately, I don't have the answers. I don't know the industry that well. Certainly, we're both in the same industry when it comes to the entertainment experience. We know that competition is out there. We know that all industries, including our own, face competition, whether that be off-reservation gaming, whether that be state-owned casinos, which we're seeing other states starting to look at in tough economic times in terms of creating jobs and driving revenues. We've even heard our own governor comment on what some future possibilities might be. Unfortunately, I don't know if, again, adding more machines or more video lottery terminals in this one specific case gets the racing industry to where it needs to be. Would we like to be a part of that overall discussion on what the future of gambling in Oregon should be or should look like, or how can we do this in a more equitable manner? We'd love to be at the table. But as far as right now, I don't know enough about the racing industry to comment. I would imagine there's problems throughout the country with the racing industry. Maybe that's a generational gap. I don't know how that industry is going. I've heard of other states doing things like adding casino-style machines at races and looking at other options to keep that industry alive. So I think we need to look at the overall picture in certainly a field that is not ours, but we'd love to have that discussion as really partners in the entertainment industry.
Thank you.
Other questions? I think, thank you, Mr. Martin. I think what I'd like to do, committee, I sense there's concern on the committee. I don't sense that the door is totally shut, but there's some unanswered questions. We do have a revenue impact that shows an increase of $600,000 in lottery as a result of this bill. So it would be my suggestion that we send the bill to the Committee on Revenue so that decision can be looked at also from the revenue standpoint, because clearly we wouldn't be able to go to the floor even if there was that, but at least that discussion could continue and in Senator Burdick's Revenue Committee.
Mr. Chair, do you want to send it with after we adopt the Dash 2s?
I think I'd like to adopt the Dash 2, and just judging the thought of the committee, we'll send it without recommendation to the Revenue Committee.
So I'll make the motion to move the Dash 2 amendments to Senate Bill 779.
Okay. Senator Starr has moved the Dash 2 amendment to Senate Bill 779. Discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Verger.
I will vote for the Dash 2 amendment simply because I think it is a better bill. However, I would be, if you were having a vote today, I would be opposed to the bill. But I will vote for the Dash 2 simply because it does reduce the number in going to revenue.
Thank you, Senator. Any other question? Any objections?
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 779 as amended by the Dash 2 amendments to the Committee on Revenue.
Okay. Senator Starr has moved Senate Bill 779 as amended by the Dash 2 amendment to the Committee on Revenue without recommendation. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? So order. And we'll ask you to continue that discussion in revenue. And we are adjourned.